Well, if you're like me, when you hear the subject of authority, or maybe even when you hear the word authority, there is generally a negative reaction. I've heard a lot of sermons on authority in my life, and a lot of times when that topic comes up, it just gives me a bad feeling. I don't know if that is just myself or if that is common to many people, but I get the impression that that is something that happens with a lot of people. We don't like to hear a lot about authority in our society in general. We like to think that we are in control of our own destiny. We like to think that we're in control of our own lives and so on and so forth. And so for someone to tell us what to do, for someone to have authority over us, well, that just kind of rubs us the wrong way. And so we hear anti-authority messages in our society. And a lot of times, really, the way we hear sermons in the church, authority is presented as a negative thing. What are we not allowed to do? We can't do this, we can't do that. And we hear these lessons on authority is often with a negative tone and a negative connotation. Even if those sermons are correct, even though they are doctrinally sound sermons, and there are certainly things that we cannot do, that seems to be like the focus of a lot of authority sermons. And I looked on our website, and I realized that Jeff gave some sort of sermon on authority recently. I was not here for that, so I don't know if I'm going to be repeating anything that he said. I'm sure that I won't. I'm sure he had a perspective and some thoughts that were very different. But I wanted to talk about that this evening, and maybe in some upcoming lessons talk about that as well. Because I think it's an important topic that we have to understand from the Bible and that we have to wrestle with and ultimately understand that it is a good thing as the Bible presents it. But I think a lot of things that happen in our culture and in our society and even in our church often make us think negatively about authority. And so just up front, I'm going to tell you, as the title says, we're going to talk about why authority is a good thing. And when we hear that word and when we talk about that subject, we want to feel good about it. We want to have a positive attitude towards it. And so before we start talking about sermons about what God's authority means for the church and our practices, we need to talk about the real grand picture of authority in the Bible. And so I want us to look at that this evening and see if we can take a couple thoughts and ideas about the authority of God. If you turn to Judges chapter 19, there is a story here that I will warn is probably one of the most graphic stories in all of the Bible. It is really a horrifying story. But the Bible deals with reality, and as awful as this story is, it is a story that we need to learn some things from. In the book of Judges, we watch the downward spiral of Israel as a nation. Things get worse. They don't do everything they're supposed to do in kicking out the inhabitants of the land at the very beginning, and it only gets worse from there. And the people of the nation reject God's rule, and they seek to establish their own rule. And so there is this refrain that happens over and over, and at the end of the book, in Judges chapter 21, the book ends by saying, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." People have rejected any kingship and the kingship of God specifically in Israel. And so in Judges chapter 19, we have one such story of what happens when that is rejected. And I'm not going to take the time. Really, the story takes up the entire chapter, and I don't want to look at that story in depth this evening. But before we get there, we'll start in verse 22. But to set the stage, what has happened is that this man is traveling, this Israelite man is traveling, and he decides along the way he needs to stop. Night is coming, and he gets to the town of Jebus. And he says, "No, I'm not going to stop there," because at this point, Jebus was really a Gentile city. It was a city they hadn't conquered and taken out. Jebus eventually became the city of Jerusalem. But at this point, it's still a city of foreigners. And so it's not a city that he feels comfortable going to, because these are not my countrymen, and they might not treat me the right way. So I'm going to go further on and go to another city, a city where my countrymen are, and they're going to treat me right because I feel safe there, and it's my country. And so they get to this city, and there's a warning. This old man comes out and says, warns them to come and don't spend the night in the town square. No one gives them any hospitality. But this old man comes and says, you come and stay at my house, because if you stay in the town square, you're going to be in trouble. So beginning in verse 22, while they were celebrating, behold, they're celebrating at this man's house, behold, the men of the city, certain worthless fellows, surrounded the house, pounding the door, and they spoke to the owner of the house, the old man, saying, bring out the man who came into your house, that we may have relations with him. Then the man, the owner of the house, went out to them and said to them, no, my fellows, please do not act so wickedly. Since this man has come into my house, do not commit this act of folly. Here is my virgin daughter and his concubine. Please let me bring them out so that you may ravish them and do to them whatever you wish. But do not commit such an act of folly against this man. But the men would not listen to him. So the man seized his concubine and brought her out to them. And they raped her and abused her all night until the morning and let her go at the approach of dawn. As the day began to dawn, the woman came and fell down at the doorway of the man's house where her master was until full daylight. When her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went on to go on his way, then behold, his concubine was lying at the doorway of the house with her hands on the threshold. He said to her, get up and let us go. But there was no answer. Then he placed her on the donkey, and the man arose and went to his home. When he entered his house, he took a knife and laid hold of his concubine and cut her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout the territory of Israel. All who saw it said, nothing like this has ever happened or been seen from the day when the sons of Israel came up from the land of Egypt to this day. Consider it, take counsel, and speak up. This man goes to a city where his countrymen are supposed to invite him, and one man does show him some hospitality. And the best way he can show him his hospitality is to keep him safe from these people, and he has to give up his concubine and offers his daughter for them to satisfy their raging lust and their appetites. And this city, instead of giving them the hospitality that they're supposed to give, they do the very same thing that the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah do. They're appetites are just uncontrollable, and it's a very similar story to the depravity we see in Genesis, in that story. And so this concubine is raped and abused all night and is dead in the morning. And it's just a graphic and horrifying and awful story. I can't imagine reading a more worse, more horrifying story than this one. I read this story, and I bring this story to our attention because this is an important story to think about when we think about the authority of God. This story shows what happens when a society refuses to accept authority. Maybe not even God's authority in this case. Maybe we don't even have to go that far. But they have refused to accept authority in general. And every man's doing what is right in his own eyes, and everyone does whatever they want to do. And so there is no authority. And there's no one to stop these people from abusing this woman or trying to abuse this man. This is what a society that refuses authority looks like. And governments in general. Governments are made so that there is authority, so that there is civility. That's what separates, that's why the Romans called the people who were not Romans barbarians, because they didn't have the same authority. They didn't have the same government. Of course, they did. That was a derogatory term. But the idea is that government brings authority, and authority brings some sort of civility to these people. Authority brings security. And we find that true in so many instances. We could think of several examples in which authority brings us security. Maybe a more trivial example is the example of trying to figure out in a group of people where you're going to go to eat. Where are we going to go to eat? Well, we've eaten everything. I don't know where we're going to go eat. I want to go here. You want to go there. And no, I've had that recently, and I don't want to eat that anymore. And then someone steps in there and says, all right, we're going to Olive Garden. And everyone says, all right, fine, let's just go. Someone made a decision. We're going to go. And we're glad, and we're happy, because someone came in and made a decision. And authority gave us some sense of security that, yes, now I have a place to go, and there we are. And so just even that trivial sense, even in something so simple, we see that working. We see that working in families and how that works for children. Children need rules and boundaries if they're going to feel secure. Now, they're certainly going to test those boundaries. That's not questioned. But just because they're testing those boundaries doesn't mean they don't need those boundaries. And really, it doesn't mean they don't want those boundaries as well. Because that's what makes them feel secure, knowing that mom and dad are there, knowing that there are things, that there is order and peace in the world. We see that in children, and that is, of course, true in everyone's life as well. There are boundaries and authorities that make us feel secure. And so that leads us really to the first observation. I want to make two observations this evening, very simple observations that are going to help maybe help us think of authority, and I believe the way the Bible presents it, and help us think of it in those terms and not simply on our terms. A lot of times we start and talk about authority maybe on a philosophical level or start with a definition of authority, but we don't always go to the Bible and look at the picture that the Bible gives of authority, and we accept kind of the worldly view of it instead. Now, I want us to look at a couple, at least two things this evening that the Bible has to say about it. And number one comes from the idea of authority and security, or authority and peace. Authority brings both peace and security. Jeremiah chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. If you want to turn there, I don't have any scriptures that are going to be on the screen this evening. Jeremiah chapter 16, verses 1 through 5. The word of the Lord also came to me, saying, you shall not take a wife for yourself. This is the Lord speaking to Jeremiah. He says to Jeremiah, you shall not take a wife for yourself, nor have sons or daughters in this place. For thus says the Lord concerning the sons and daughters born in this place, and concerning their mothers who bear them, and their fathers who beget them in this land, they will die of deadly diseases. They will not be lamented or buried. They will be as dung on the surface of the ground and come to an end by sword and famine, and their carcasses will become food for the birds of the sky and for the beasts of the earth. God says to Jeremiah, you don't want to start a family in what's about to happen, because it's going to be ugly and nasty, and you don't want to get a wife and have a family that sees this and has to go through this. So don't even bother looking for a wife, because it's going to be more trouble and more pain and agony than it's worth. That's what's going to happen. Continue on in verse 5. For thus says the Lord, do not enter a house of mourning or go to lament or to console them. For I have withdrawn my peace from this people, declares the Lord, my loving kindness and compassion. Why is it going to look so ugly? Why is it going to be so nasty? Why should Jeremiah not even try to start a family? Because God is going to withdraw his peace from this people. And when God withdraws his peace, it turns into chaos. And so we think about God's role in the covenant with Israel. God's role in the covenant with Israel was that he was the protector. There are two parties in the covenant, and one person has the ability, or the task rather, the job, the responsibility to bring protection to the lesser party. And that's God's part of the covenant. And so his authority for his peace to come about in that covenant, his authority had to be recognized. And if his authority was recognized, they would receive his protection, because the surrounding nations would not be able to come and bring chaos upon them. The sword would be put away from their land, and peace would come about. So the surrounding nations couldn't bring war on them. Not only war from without, but peace from within. And peace from within means justice, that there is order, that there is civility, again, in this nation. And so God brings justice to his people from disallowing them to hurt one another. And so there's protection from within the group and protection from without the group by God. While we often think of Israel's punishment as coming from God, that when Israel does bad things, when they break the covenant, that God punishes them. And that's true. That's what we see in Deuteronomy. There's blessings and there's curses. If you don't hold up your end of the covenant, there's going to be curses. But there is another way I think this passage shows us how to think about that. It's not so much God punishing them as God passively taking away his authority. He's just not going to protect you anymore. And he's going to let whatever happens, happens. And he's not going to control it. In other words, God is not going to use his authority to protect them anymore. And when God's authority to say no to this nation, you're not going to attack Israel, or no to these people, you're not going to do injustice to my people. When God takes his authority away to say no to those people, then his people have no peace anymore. By rejecting God's authority, these people have rejected God's peace. Psalm 29, beginning in verse 10, connects these ideas as well. The idea of God's kingship and God's peace. Psalm chapter 29 and verse 10. The Lord sat as king at the flood. Yes, the Lord sits as king forever. The Lord will give strength to his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. God is going to give peace to his people. Why? Because he is sitting on his throne as king. And when he is in authority, there is peace. That is a positive thing. That is a good thing. When the Lord is king, good things happen. Peace happens. Familiar with the Gospel of Mark, we've been studying that. Some of us have on Sunday mornings. And in turn to Mark chapter 4 in verse 35. And this is Jesus in the boat with his disciples. And they're in the boat on that day in verse 35. On that day when evening came, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with them. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, "Why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith?" They became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and sea obey him?" Do you see what's happening in this story? The raging seas all around them, the chaos that's happening. But the good thing is they have the authority of God himself in the boat with them. And when God's authority is in the boat, peace comes about because God just speaks and things become calm. And the raging seas around them are no longer a threat because they have the authority of God to simply speak those words and create calm. God's authority means peace. It means tranquility. It is a good thing. We just sang a song about that, the solid rock of God, of Christ, that no matter what's going on around us, we have that rock that we hold on to. And it may be difficult and there may be things going on all around us, but as long as we're holding on to that rock, we're secure. And we're safe because that rock is not going to move. And we sing about that in our songs. Our individualistic society with a can-do spirit and that attitude tells us that if we want to have peace, then the way to peace is through hard work and self-reliance. And you go out and you blaze that trail and you make your life what you want it to be. And when you make it, then you'll be happy and then you'll be at peace. Only when I'm free to be me, to do what I want to do, to be in control of my life, then I can have peace. Then I will have freedom. That's what our society tells us. And certainly, that sinks into our minds as well at times, I believe. If only I can get to a certain point in my life, if only I can get past college, if only I can get these bills paid off, if only I can get this problem out of the way, if only I can get somewhere, then finally, if I can do these things, I'll have peace. We want to have peace because we're in control. And if we could just make those things happen, we'll have peace. And of course, if we look at things realistically, we realize we never have control over everything. And we don't have the ability to create that peace for ourselves. Now, we certainly can make it worse or more peaceful for ourselves, but we don't have the control of the circumstances around us, ultimately. We may hope for less stressful situations than the one we're in, but if we really want to seek peace, if we really want to have security and tranquility, we don't look to see ourselves first, we look to God. Because God is the king, and God is the one who is in control, and that's the place where peace starts. It's always tied to God's authority. So if we want to seek something good in our lives, if we want to seek the peace that every one of us desires in our lives, we see authority as a good thing. We say, I want the authority of God in my life. Because that means that my life is better, that no matter what happens, even if things do get a little out of hand or a little stressful, that's okay. At least I have God to hold on to, and I know that His authority is going to bring me a peace that no other authority can. We have to look to the authority of Jesus, the ruler of the world, first. In the ancient cultures, and even today, really, but this is very obvious in ancient cultures when we look and study at them. Ancient kings had many important responsibilities. But perhaps the most important responsibility was their job is to serve as leader of the armies of the nation. And a close second, or maybe even first, maybe 1A and 1B, is that not only were they leaders of the armies, but they gave justice. Just like we talked about God giving protection from without and protection from within, that was the job of a king. So when the Israelites grew tired of Samuel and his family, they clamored for this king. And they wanted a king who would be this glorious military leader like all the kings of the other nations. And he would bring them this peace and security, and they could look to him and feel comforted and know that he was there to give them that peace. And they wanted some man, someone who could do that for them. And God says to Samuel, of course, they're not rejecting you, Samuel. They're rejecting me. They want some man to rule over them when what they have is the ruler and of all creation, God himself. And yet they want a man to be their king. And so in 1 Samuel chapter 8, in verse 19, they clamor for that king. They say, no, but there shall be a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Both of those things we just talked about in that verse, that they may judge us and go out and fight our battles. We want someone who's going to bring us peace, and we'll feel comfortable when we get that, when we get that type of king. That happens in Roman history, or something called the Pax Romana, and they enforced peace by their military might. And it was that same concept, that it was their job to secure peace through the military and through laws and through justice. I believe this biblical background, we've just looked at several passages that tie these things together, and that biblical background of the benevolent, good authority of God is what is often missing from our understanding of authority. It's assumed a lot of times when we start talking about God's authority over the church that God is somehow this tyrannical monster and he doesn't want you to enjoy it and he's going to tell you what not to do and he doesn't want you to have fun and this and that and the other. And that's the picture of authority that we get, and we allow that to sink into our minds. And so when we hear things about it, we talk that way and we think that way and we cringe when we hear that word, because we've allowed that mentality to get into our mind and not the mentality that we see in the Bible. That the authority of God brings peace, and it is a good thing. That is not the idea we see from the Bible, that God's authority is tyrannical and aimed at making us miserable. God's authority is directed toward our peace and happiness. That's everything God wants to do for us, is make us peaceful and a joyful people ultimately. And the lie that the world tells us, that Satan would have us to believe, is the one that the world gives us, that God is a tyrant. And when we talk about God's authority, it's just God telling us what to do, and he has these arbitrary rules. But when we reject the authority of God, we also have to understand that we're rejecting the peace that comes with that authority. And that's a very important thing for us to understand. The authority of God is a good thing. Not only does the authority of God bring this peace, and we could look at example after example after example of that, of how God's authority brings good things in the Old Testament, even in the New. But secondly, this evening, I want to talk about the scope of God's authority. God holds authority over everything. Turn to Ephesians chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 20. This is the Apostle Paul speaking about Christ, and we'll pick up kind of mid-sentence there in chapter 20, that God, which he brought about in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion and every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the one to come. And he put all things in subjection under his feet and gave him his head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Notice in this passage, first of all, notice that Jesus is not simply the head of the church. Yes, he is the head of the church, and that's something we look to this passage for, but he is not just the head of the church. He is above all rule and authority and power and dominion. A lot of times we have this view of authority that is negative and is also shallow because God is authoritative over the church. No, God is not just authoritative over the church. His authority is over all things. And when Christ was raised from the dead, it wasn't just so that he could create this people. It was also so that he could show the entire world, the entire unseen realm and seen realm, that he is in authority. Romans chapter 13 and verse 1. Romans chapter 13 and verse 1, the Apostle Paul again, he says, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Authority starts with God first. And if there is a nation, if there is a country, if there is someone in charge, it is because God allows it. Because it starts with God and goes down from there. So if you're rebelling against your government, against your country, then you are derivatively rebelling against the authority of God as well. Because he has set those rulers in place. Of course, that doesn't mean that God is not holding the people he gives authority accountable. The rulers and nations, rulers of nations and these countries that abuse their authority and governments that are corrupt are not going to get away with that. God's going to judge them because God ultimately is the authority that will bring the justice that needs to come to those who are abusing authority. So we don't need to assume that those authorities on this earth are perfect or that anyone's getting away with anything. But we need to understand that God is in control and that it all starts with God's authority first over all things in the world and in the spiritual world as well, in the heavenly places. God's authority simply is. And so we have to be careful not to narrow it down to just God's authority is about what we can or cannot do in church. That is such a shallow view of authority that we miss out on the riches and the big picture that we see presented in the Bible. That God is not just in control of how we sing or how we do this or that or the other, but God is in control of everything. And every knee ultimately will see that one day and will bow down to him. So given that God has this authority over all men and over all institutions, how much more should we be careful to submit to God's authority, to his benevolent and good authority, when we're the ones, out of all the people on this earth, who are claiming that he is our king? When we take on the name of Christ, we are taking on his kingship, and we are therefore accepting his authority. And we are glad to do that, because we know about the peace and the goodness that that brings. But we ought to be all the more submissive to his authority, since we have put on his name. God's intention in raising Christ was not just to establish the church, as we said, but to make his rule known over all creation. We need to understand that as his citizens. And so aside from that false, tyrannical view that God's authority is there to tell us what not to do, I think this is another crucial piece that we miss. The scope of God's authority is greater than even just the pages of the Bible, or it's greater than anything that we see in this earth, greater than just over the church. It is part of God himself, and that cannot be quantified or qualified. God's authority is a grand authority. It is the authority of the Creator himself. And so both of those things, I believe, are things that we ought to keep in mind when we think about authority. I want to talk this evening about submitting to that authority and the difficulty of that. If you want to turn to Psalm chapter 10, Psalm 10, we have an example, I believe, of the authority of God. I'm going to go ahead and read this whole psalm, and we'll talk about it briefly before we close this evening. Psalm chapter 10 and verse 1. Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? In pride, the wicked hotly pursue the afflicted. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. For the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and the greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. The wicked, in the haughtiness of his countenance, does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. His ways prosper at all times. Your judgments are on high, out of his sight. As for all of his adversaries, he snorts at them. He says to himself, I will not be moved. Throughout all generations, I will not be in adversity. His mouth is full of curses and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is mischief and wickedness. He sits in the lurking places of the villages. In the hiding places, he kills the innocent. His eyes stealthily watch for the unfortunate. He lurks in a hiding place as a lion in his lair. He lurks to catch the afflicted. He catches the afflicted when he draws him into his net. He crouches, he bows down, and the unfortunate fall by his mighty ones. He says to himself, God is forgotten. He has hidden his face. He will never see it. Arise, O Lord. O God, lift up your hand. Do not forget the afflicted. Why has the wicked spurned God? He has said to himself, you will not require it. You have seen it, for you have beheld mischief and vexation to take it into your hand. The unfortunate commits himself to you. You have been the helper of the orphan. Break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer. Seek out his wickedness until you find none. The Lord is king forever and ever. Nations have perished from his land. O Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to vindicate the orphan and the oppressed, so that man who is of the earth will no longer cause terror. This psalm starts out with a description of the wicked man and all the oppression and all the things he's doing. And he looks at God and says, God doesn't see that. God's not there. He's not going to do anything about it. And if he did saw, he forgot about it. And so he continues on in all his wicked ways, and he oppresses the evil man, and he takes advantage of people who are helpless. And he doesn't care about anything, and he has his own authority. He does things his own way and forgets God. This prideful person rejects the idea of God and the idea that God even has the power to judge him. This is a rebellious attitude at its utmost that we see at the beginning of this psalm. But the psalmist, beginning in verse 12, the psalmist cries out for God. And his cry is for God to show his authority. Because God is the king. And if God shows his authority, then everything will be made right. And so he says in verse 12, or he says in verse 16 rather, the Lord is king forever and ever. That is a statement of God's authority. And those people who are helpless, those people who are oppressed, those people are not going to have any more terror. Because the peace of God is going to come to them. Because God is going to rule and his authority is going to be made known. Not only is he ruling now, but sometimes, he is ruling now, but sometimes it's hard for us to see. Sometimes it's a test of our faith to believe that God is a God of peace when we see the things around us. But the psalmist cries out to God. I think that ultimately, this is one of the fundamental things we have an issue with. The way we talk about authority being negative or our society being negative. The truth is, every society has a problem with the authority of God throughout all of history. That's not something new, but certainly we can see it in our own lives, in our own society, and maybe in our own minds when we hear that word authority and when we cringe or when we just want to turn our minds off to it. Ultimately, the reason we have a problem with authorities because of our pride. And that's our ultimate downfall when it comes to God's authority. We simply want to do what it is that we want to do. And yes, maybe the authority of God is good. Maybe the Bible talks about it in good ways, and maybe it's grand and it's over all things. But the bottom line is I would rather just do what I want to do. And that means that either we haven't been broken enough by this world, that it hasn't beaten us down to allow us to submit to God's authority enough, or we just simply have been blind and not wanting to see the consequences that the Bible shows us. Either our experience hasn't broken down or our vision hasn't become as clear as it ought to be. But despite that problem, despite that issue of that rebellious nature of man, every one of us desires that peace that only God can bring. We desire the peace of God, we just don't want to submit to Him. The problem is that's not possible. And our pride often blinds us into thinking that we can have our own authority and have our own peace at the same time. And so we are our own worst enemy in that way. So I hope that as we look at authority and maybe some of the coming lessons in the months or weeks ahead, that we can start talking about it in some of these ways and maybe explore some ways in the positive light of God's authority. If we will learn to recognize the benevolence of God's authority, the scope of God's authority, the security and the peace and the power of God's authority, then that will give us, make it a lot easier for us to submit to it. Because when we see that grand scale and we see all those good things and then we see ourselves in comparison to it, then we have no choice but to say, I ought to submit to that authority because I have no power in comparison to the authority of God. We have to make sure then that authority is not some sort of dirty word to us. We have to keep this biblical view of it. We have to look at what the Bible says about it and not allow our own preconceived ideas or the ideas of our culture to tell us who God is and what His authority means, as if He is this God that is trying to zap us or trying to get after us or trying to tell us what to do. That's not the picture of authority that the Bible gives to us. God, as we said before, wants good for all His people, and He wants good for all creation. But the thing is, God is the only one who knows how to do it. God is the only one who knows how to order this creation properly. When we try to order creation of our lives in our own way, we're doing it against God's. And God's the only one who can understand how to bring peace to His creation and the people He created. If we will submit to His authority, we'll gain peace now. We'll have that rock to hold on to now. We'll be in the boat with Jesus now. And we'll fully know His peace when He comes again and shows everyone the authority that has always been from the beginning. The authority that has been shown in the heavenly places with the resurrection of Jesus to be at the throne of God will be made known to all people. And we will experience peace in its fullest extent, and we will see it in its grandest extent on that day. So this evening, I want to offer those of you here the opportunity who are not Christians to submit to God's authority. It is a good thing. Your life will be made peaceful because of it. And of course, there is paradox in that because the Christian is told to take up his cross, and there's a lot of hardships that someone has to endure to enter the kingdom of God. It doesn't mean that you're going to be free of conflict. But it does mean that the authority of God will be in your life and that there is a peace that will allow you to get through conflict and allow you to have confidence in the face of the storms of life. We want to offer you that opportunity to submit to God's authority this evening, to go down and bury that man who has been rebellious against God and be raised up a new man in His kingdom, submissive to His authority, and willing to claim Him as your king. If there are those here this evening who have been baptized and you've claimed Christ as your king, but you haven't lived as if Christ was your king, maybe you've gotten out of order, maybe you've thought, well, I don't need God's authority in my life, and now you've experienced the peace that gets taken away from you as a result of that, the guilt of sin, the pain that sin brings because you rejected God's authority and you need to come back. We want to help you as well. If there's anything we can do for you this evening, won't you come now while we stand, while we sing?